I'm playing with buttons. This is Pure Decking for October the 25th, 1985. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and today we have Sard and Heavy. And as you all can see, I put the opening in the show template so I'd get it right.
Hooray for enunciation and speaking.
What's up, guys?
Oh, not a whole heck of a lot.
So, anyways, a minor change in format. I'm essentially reducing the news section, the current events, as we call it, in the show, because I want to do more topics and more Digital Dojo. So, kind of less there and more at the bottom. So, yeah. And, you know, again, for the music today, I don't know anybody who heard on the stream earlier, but we're just going to use Patient Zero because I'm lazy, and it's a good default choice. So, let's see. First, just a quick, some quick station news here. The broadcast box, the system's back up and running full steam. We should be good to go. I've already got Pure Decking caught up on the site. IHN is going to be the two of them are up. I've got one left to post. It just got done encoding like literally 5 minutes before we started. So we should have the site back up to date here very, very soon. And essentially it's full steam ahead at this point. I'm going to start doing clock wheels and seeing about what kind of automation I can do on the station side. Start getting some more going on the stream besides just music. I'm going to throw in hopefully the archives of the old shows. Have it occasionally pick an old Pure Decking, old IHN, throw that on the stream. I need to grab Lore Shit and get that on the stream as well. I say shit. He has, like, he and Lamb Chops. Fuck. I cannot believe I'm blanking on Lore's partner's name. He does the Sipper. Mm-hmm. Somebody help me out here.
I'm blanking too.
I haven't had enough beer.
That one guy with the red hair. Huh?
Yeah, him. Oh, yeah, he's going to get pissed at us too for giving a description.
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name.
I literally, oh man, on the Sipper I was on, I yelled, "What the hell was wrong with you?" at Gen Con, and I cannot believe I'm blanking on his name. Quick, somebody pull up Lore's site and tell me his name. This is embarrassing. Oh, man. I have owe such an apology to the sloth. Slothin.
Slothin Baddington.
Yeah.
I owe Slothin. I am sorry. I've either had too much or not enough to drink. Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
There we go. So, that's embarrassing. Moving coyly right along. First news story I got up here that was cool. You guys will like this. It's from Dark Reading. URL shorteners. Spammers are taking open source software and setting up their own URL shorteners. You know, like the Bitly or the tiny URL, that kind of thing. The actual slugs from the article here. URL shorteners become popular tool for spammers to hide their spam sites. But now there's a spam gang with at least 80 of these damn things. And they're opening them up to the public. Anybody can set them up. They're trying to make them look legit. And it was Symantec who discovered them, mostly using the .info domain, going back here. Unlike URL shortening sites, they're effectively public. Anybody can create shortened URLs with the site, so they're actually a legitimate service. And they're standing them up using open source software and then using them to send spam.
Well, spam's a good business to be in, and if you can do the open source thing, that's cool.
Well, they're using open source URL shorteners is what they're doing, and then just standing up lots of them. I guess it's sort of the same concept as setting up, I don't know, 20 to 100 Blogger and WordPress, you know, the free blogs, and, you know, cut and pasting the same article onto all of them to get the Google AdWords, so.
Yeah.
I was just kind of wondering, like, how does Symantec find that shit? You would think they'd stumble across it, or they're, like, looking at, I don't even know, like, can you go into Google and see, like, what's recently been added to the index and stuff like that? I'd be interested to hear about how they find this shit.
Well, there's all kinds of crazy things to do with Google, so I'm not going to say you can't do that. I'm not personally aware of a way to do it, but I have had some dealings with Symantec, And I know they operate a fairly large research center. They've got quite a bit of resources thrown at malware research. They've got basically they're combing things like Facebook and Twitter, following the links, purposely letting machines get infected with bots, doing all kinds of actually really cool research. And
when you said research development, and I pictured air quotes research, a bunch of dudes sitting in an office somewhere just surfing the internet, laughing their asses off,
and getting their machines purposely infected. I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that and looking at all crazy porn and
if you want to get your malware, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. or if you want to go all conspiracy theory, they're developing malware to infect computers so that they can continue to exist as a company.
You know, that comes up and goes away a lot. You keep hearing that conspiracy theory that the antivirus companies are the ones making the viruses. Mm-hmm. They could be. I mean, there's enough stuff out there. I do wonder about some of them. Some of the old school viruses, the ones that were just destructive, the ones that all they did was take out a machine for the point of taking out your machine, I could believe that. But a lot of viruses and malware today, they're sending spam, they're setting up botnets, they're standing up, you know, fake web servers.
Yeah, it's all about trying to make money anyway.
Yeah, it's essentially organized crime these days. So
right. I would think it'd be harder for a big corporation like Symantec to like they might be able to do it on the side, but someone's got to, you know, look at their taxes or something and be like, you have like 80 grand coming from nowhere. What the fuck is this?
No, I'm not going to dispute a corporation's ability to hide money, but I don't think the antivirus companies are doing that very much, if they are at all. I could see the argument when it was just destructive, because then it's like, yeah, you better buy this or else your computer's going to get blown up, right? But with the way modern malware works, there's enough of a cash incentive. The antivirus companies don't have to do it. There's enough assholes out there doing it on their own.
Good point.
You know, and even back then, when people were doing it just to be destructive, I never really bought into the idea that the antivirus companies were doing it. There's too many people out there that'll pick this malware apart and figure out where it came from. That these days, doing that is a, you know, if you're making an antivirus and then making the viruses that the antivirus detects, that's a good way to get sued. So,
yeah,
I don't think. Whereas they can hide their finances, I don't know about hiding the source of the malware anymore. That's
right.
You know, they get
FBI, all those people, like, if it gets big enough, they start looking at it.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You actually just reminded me, I'll steal your thunder a little bit for story time.
Yeah,
I remember my first piece of malware. Nah, not really. It's probably just someone fucking around. But on my very first computer, around Windows 95, I was probably 10, 11 years old, something like that. AOL.
You were 10, 11 years old using Windows 95? My first computer was a Commodore 64. I didn't have to worry about viruses back then.
Yeah, my parents were old. They took a while to adapt to the computer revolution, you know, type thing. I had to fight to get that. So I was actually pretty lucky even to get a computer. But I had AOL and all that. Of course, you know, all the fun things you can find on AOL dial-up.
On AOL, did you ever do the stupid trick where you pressed enter a bunch of times and then use the fonts to set the username to be whatever you wanted?
No.
People. You never did that? Oh, man.
No, I didn't know you could do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, all you do is press enter several times so your real screen name just scrolled off the default size of the window. And then you could use the fonts to set some text to look exactly like a username would look on the other person's end.
Huh.
And it was one tick smaller, bold, and red, if I remember correctly. Red or blue. I don't remember exactly which one it was. But I got a buddy of mine's little brother, very, very good. I put AOL Internal Investigations as my screen name.
Nice.
And just sent in, please identify yourself. Now, understand, I was 12 when I did this, right? So, maybe 13. Anyways, when I did this, and, you know, immediately went offline. I mean, like, gone. And this wasn't even like the stupid dorker crap of sending malformed characters through the IM to knock people offline. This was just straight up offline and away from the computer. About 5 minutes later, I called my friend and I said, "So what's going on? I saw your brother online for like 2 seconds. He goes, "Oh yeah." I was like, "Yeah, where'd he go?" He goes, "How do you know about that?" Sure. I told him what I did. And he said, "He's been in the corner crying and shaking." Anyways, awesome. Back with your story.
Anyways, back in the old days, I don't remember what I was downloading. Probably looking for some games and God knows what else. But
porn.
Yeah, downloaded an executable file. Didn't have any antivirus or anything. Of course, ran it. Then all of a sudden, full screen on my computer screen is Homer Simpson. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then below him it says, "Your computer is going to be reformatted," and there's a countdown.
Oh no!
Yeah. Actually, no. I don't think it said reformat. I think it said like your hard drive is going to get erased or something.
Did it actually erase the drive, or was it just a scare?
You know what? It scared the fuck out of me so much I punched the freaking power button.
Yeah.
And shut my shit off before the countdown got to zero. So honestly, I don't know. To this day, I actually spent a little time trying to find references to old
you
old
wanted programs. To find it?
I could do that. So like I said, I have no idea if it was legit or not. It's probably just some dude fucking with another friend and I happened to get his executable.
Yeah. Well, you never know. Sometimes they do stuff like that, sometimes they didn't. I mean, I've in my explorations, I've done some interesting things and been able to walk around to my cell phone taking over televisions, but that's entirely beside the point. So there's some interesting stuff you can do to really scare people, you know, with JPEGs.
Oh God.
So moving right along, next thing I wanted to throw in, the link I have is actually just to the Wikipedia article. Windows XP is 10 years old today, to the day.
Woohoo!
10 years ago, 2001, October 25th is when Windows XP came out. And the reason I get to acknowledge this is thank you, Microsoft, for making sure I had future employment to this day in security.
I can attest to that, too. Thank you for giving me a job of supporting your OS,
you know,
which I like, and I support still. I haven't moved to 7 yet. I don't really have a need to right now. But
you know, for all the slagging we do on Microsoft, they really do keep us in a job.
That's true. They do.
So yeah.
Yes. Cool. And you know, and let's go back to XP. You know, what did we have before? Essentially prior to XP, everything really was just kind of a buttered on shell or DOS. I mean, it wasn't really anything that was a whole OS per se. It was just DOS with, you know, a knife. Yeah.
No. Windows 95 and Windows 98 were not shells over DOS. You're thinking Windows 3.1. But yeah, you know, prior to even prior to 98 a little bit, you had all this stuff out there. You had, Haiku's based off of now. You had the Next Step boxes. You had, I'm blanking on all these old. You had OS2 Warp. You had, of course, the DOS
Amiga.
Stuff. Amiga, thank you. Yes. You had all this stuff out there, and then Microsoft just comes in and clobbers it. Now, there's good and there's bad. The good is that it standardized the computer industry. Anybody could learn Windows and be able to use a machine, and made sure we'd have plenty of employment fighting viruses and system configuration issues for this day, to this day.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily agree with your first statement, anyone can learn to use a computer. I happen to know several people at my job that they still have no freaking clue what they're doing.
Fair point.
So that's cool, though. I saw an article on this. I think it was Slashdot or something, but they're still saying, you know, of course, they're talking about how people converting over to Windows 7 and all that. They're still saying that, I forget if it's right now or they're still predicting in the future that Windows XP is still going to have like 47% of the market, just because obviously application development follows the operating system upgrades and things like that. But 47% I thought was pretty quite long. And I know from my experience at work and all that, that our applications, we're just now converting some applications to Windows Server 2003.
Yeah. We're still fighting to get people off XP and onto 7 where I work, and that's going to be an uphill battle for years.
Yeah, dude, well, we haven't even started yet. We're still pushing out XP workstations.
Yeah.
If you have a user base that's not familiar with Linux and playing around with the goodness that is Linux, and even in some cases Linux doesn't have the ability to run older hardware, this legacy hardware, I mean, it works great for it. So, I mean, why would we throw away all this stuff that we can use for something? You know, even if it's just to run Skype on a box so you can make phone calls or, you know, whatever.
Well, that's true, and I still have several XP boxes kicking around just because either I don't feel like trying to upgrade them to 7, or I don't think the hardware would handle it very well. Personally, I'd rather throw Linux systems on there. I've seen Linux do better on older hardware than XP, but that's almost a personal preference thing. I'm not so much saying that you should be. Well, you know, I don't know. I know people who to this day still use Windows 98, and they don't have virus problems anymore because nobody's targeting it. So, yeah. You know, eventually really? XP will be that way. I did see just recently that Windows 7 finally overtook it as the primary Windows OS. But right. I think they're going to have the same problem with Windows 7 that they did with XP, where they couldn't get anybody to go from XP to Vista. And they got 7 straightened out, and 7 64-bit is a fairly good OS. That's my pretty standard go-to OS at this point for just a desktop. But I don't, you know, they're already pushing Windows 8, and everybody's taking one look at that and just going, no.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way everyone explains it, is always you get a good one, and then you skip the next one because their history shows that, you know, it's crap. And then you go, so Windows 9, you know, type thing.
Yeah.
But do you know why? I was just curious. Why is that one person still sticking with 98? Is it application support? Or
They don't want to have to buy a new version of AutoCAD. They've got all... It was a machinist, and it was at an old job. And he had a very, very old version of AutoCAD. And it was so old that he had apparently tried to use one of the newer ones on a new machine, and it like couldn't read his AutoCAD files. I don't have all the details. I was just helping him fix that laptop because I actually asked him, why the hell am I fixing this? You just need a new laptop, and because I'm, you know, old Pentium 3 thing, and I got it working too.
Did we lose Skype, guys?
What are you talking about, Heavy? We're fine. We just lost Sard.
Hello? Did we lose
Heavy, anybody? Shut up. There goes Heavy. Sard, you there? Well, okay, apparently Skype just took a dump on us, and then all we heard was Heavy going doo-doo-doo-doo. So, anyways.
Are we back?
Yes, we're back. Are you back? Are you Heavy? Heavy, are you there?
Oh, fuck.
Well, I'm just going to keep going.
I'm back. I don't know what the hell just happened.
Yeah, I think somebody's internet just took a shit, but it wasn't mine because my connection's been... I just checked the radio station. It's steady.
Huh.
So,
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
But anyways...
Drop for a sec.
Well, that completely killed my train of thought. Oh, you were asking me why that person was still on that machine. They told me they couldn't get their AutoCAD to work on a new one. So,
yeah, and that's a legitimate. That's the only ones I've heard. You know, application support doesn't work with XP. Same with hardware support. I have to. Before I started my current job, I used to do some side work, essentially, just, you know, word of mouth. People would have problems with computers. I'd help them out, you know, type thing. And had a old lady. She wanted to get her scanner working, and it was actually one of the ones that had a daughter card. Where PCI
that actually
hooked into the scanner, like had for OCR or
and
whatever.
Like this weird Centronics card on it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, dude. And like, of course, couldn't get that shit working in XP. So nope. I was just like, it's too old. You gotta buy a new scanner.
Yeah. Yeah, I just looked at the clock. I wanted to change up the format. It's not gonna happen. Still, Digital Dojo is gonna end up after the music break. That's okay. We're getting a lot of good conversation. We get a lot of conversation out of a story in the news in the template with one bullet point.
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's pretty good.
So we can bullshit. Yay! all right, next one up. This one's from Ars Technica. Yeah, researchers at Georgia Tech and MIT have figured out how to use the accelerometer in your iPhone or Android phone to figure out what you're typing from the vibrations on the desk.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I have some issues with that. I mean, does the phone have to always be a specific... I mean, well, I've got a shock mount on my microphone, so you're not going to hear it when I'm typing much, and I try to avoid typing during the show anyways. But anybody who's ever used a desk stand mic and started typing and you hear that thud, 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 I guess you probably could figure out a way to figure out what they're typing from that. But
it
had to do with intensity and probably if you figured rhythm. Out the distance and from the end key. So what if people hit the most? Spacebar, enter. So you'd maybe do some calculation based on that.
Well, I'm thinking they've probably made a very controlled. I believe it's possible. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's one of those things that it's possible, but you have to be in a controlled laboratory environment. I mean, the phone always has to be the same distance away from the keyboard. It has to be the same kind of desk. Has to be the same keyboard. You know, if you've got somebody who's got like a DAS-3 mechanical switch keyboard. Versus somebody else using one of those roll-up soft keyboards, you're not going to get the same vibrations out of that.
No. So, and that's, of course, the question is, what kind of control did they have? What kind of variation did they test for?
Yeah, well, the article didn't terribly go into detail on it. They just were, because Ars Technica was going, ooh, this is neat, which I admit, I love the concept. I mean, it's very cyberpunk. But they even got it right here in the article. They warned that hackers could potentially use their method to eavesdrop on users' keystrokes. They believe the actual threat is quite low. Again, you probably have to have a very controlled environment to make this work. But, in the right scenario, this could be fun. I guess
I was going to say, it's interesting that you saw this one because I just saw another article today on the iPad 2, I believe it was, where if you use it with... a certain one of those the cloth covers or whatever that has magnets in it, so it tells it you can hibernate now or
the smart cover. Yeah, I was actually looking at this with my boss earlier today. We couldn't get it to work on ours because they were the wrong version of the iPads.
Oh yeah, so you saw the one where there's a vulnerability in it where if you try to turn it off and then close the cover at the same time and then open it back up,
it's like to make it work. It's like the most voodoo,
That's pretty cool. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. I sent that to a bunch of buddies at work. I'm not an Apple fan, and I don't use any of their technology or anything like that. So, of course, I was just laughing it up, giving them a bunch of shit for it. But we're going to see more and more, of course, of these iOS and Apple-specific viruses and malware and all that being targeted for them as they become more and more popular, of course.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's just, at this point, I think it's still easier to get malware on the PC and just get a keylogger in there than it is to take over their phone.
Right.
Granted, don't get me wrong, phones can be an easy target, too. I'm just...
Especially if they have Bluetooth on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But the tools to do the PC are much more readily available right now. What were you going to say, Hayden?
Yeah.
I was going to say that and the new near-field communication, which has not had anybody really hammering on it yet, should be interesting technology to see what we can, what kind of hacks come up with that.
Yeah. Last thing we got up here in the news stories is, now, this story is all over the place. I probably read 3 or 4 different versions of it. Heavy bitched at me and liked the article. He's, the link he sent me better than the one I was starting with, because I just literally picked the first one out of Google because I'd read it 4 times at work. Essentially, they figured out, there's a flaw in Skype where somebody can get... I love how it's, the article I read was like, you're a skilled hacker. Yeah, sure, you watch the traffic. Skype's point-to-point communication, and they figured out that you can get somebody else's IP address from this, and... Most of the articles I read were elaborating on what all you can do if you know a user's IP address. This kind of shit's been going around since IRC. I just, a lot of people are really blowing up over this potential Skype vulnerability, which, you know, Skype says, yeah, it's point to point. You can figure out somebody's IP.
But it's owned by Microsoft now, so that means they're going to do evil things with it.
Oh, God. You know, yeah, and one of the article heavy linked us here, is it's like all about, it's like, oh, no, they can track what peer-to-peer you use, what, you know, this you use. Well, of course you can. They've got your IP address.
Yeah.
So,
but I just like the idea of this is another way to warn people. And yeah, they're doing it for sensationalism, but they're getting into the specifics again. And because it's not, granted, it's not whatever program, you know, basically faces your IP address out to, you know, other people, you're vulnerable. But in this case, it's a name that people recognize and they'd be like, oh my God, all this stuff can happen to me. Okay, if anybody are just a little bit more secure in their practices, you know, even a small percentage, it's good.
Well, that's true, but I mean, they're going on and on about how with Skype you can induce it to make connection back, that you know, sending messages and stuff like that. It's like, oh, if you get their IP, you can geolocate them. Well, yeah, that's...
Someone ought to tell them that when you go to a website, they can see your IP.
And they can and do the same thing. Do all this same shit, yeah.
Yeah, so apparently, yeah, you're right, dude. Like, I saw that article around.
Hey, article writer, why don't you come and spend an afternoon, or 2 o'clock in the morning anyway, over on the chant and see a number of people to get banned. You know, just to get an idea of how that works.
So you're on the chans at 2 a.m, Heavy.
From time to time, you know.
Well, you just made a list, I'm sure. Well, let's go ahead.
Another one?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. We'll be talking about lists in the second half of the show. Don't you worry. Let's go ahead and go take the first break here. We're going to play Sangatarian from Patient Zero. And then when we come back, we'll do Digital Dojo.
Drink it, taste it, love it. Get the fuck away, I've been dry now for so long. Still desire something wrong.
Yeah. All right. So, everybody back?
Yep.
Yep. Okay, good. Sard, you back? Yes?
Yeah, I'm here.
No? Maybe? Okay, there you are. Yep. Let's see. First up in the... Oh, wait. We're doing Digital Dojo. So, somebody...
Me love you long time.
All right. So, just the excuse to play that and piss off everyone with slanty eye syndrome. Now,
yes.
God. I'm not normally racist, but I play one on the internet. So, let's see. First one up, this one was just a good article that showed up on Lifehacker. The most common hiding places for workplace passwords. Just thought this would be fun to point out. Yeah, this is places you don't want to store your password. So if you need to go move your post-it note, do it now. We'll wait. Just hit pause on your player. And let's see here. So the ones they list out in the article are under the keyboard, under the phone, under the mouse pad, on the monitor, which you wouldn't believe how much you see that. In the top drawer and under the desk. So. Fuck. There goes Skype again.
I'm still here.
You're
still heavy drop.
It's just heavy. Okay.
But, yeah. Yeah, those are pretty, pretty common areas. I see those all the time. I actually have a pretty funny, at least I think it's pretty funny story about, an older, much older lady at my work that, she had an issue remembering her password, and she was quite literally calling the help desk every single day to have them reset her Active Directory password. Well, it got to the point where someone from the help desk actually went up to her computer, wrote down her password, put it on her monitor for her because they were tired of dealing with her, and yet she still called the help desk. So then, of course, it went from, hey, can you reset my password, to, no, your password is Casper1. Leave me the fuck alone. It got that bad.
I'll have to make sure I add Casper1 to my password lists. Anyways,
there you go. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's bad when even when they write it down, they still can't remember their password.
Yeah. Heavy, did you figure out that you had to plug? Oh, no, I guess not. Yeah, yeah. Apparently, Heavy's discovering that you have to actually leave the router plugged in. So, is he back this time?
You might have disconnected the flux capacitor.
I think he did. Heavy, have you figured out that the router has to be left plugged in to work?
Yeah, actually, I'm in there looking at processes and going, oh, that's not it. Kill this. No, that's not doing it. No. Jeez. I don't know what's going on right now.
So, anyways, next one up in Digital Dojo. This came up because of just some stuff I was looking at earlier today, so I thought this would be good to throw in. Just in case anybody is not aware of this, you should be. It's a portableapps.com. If you don't know about this one, then, you know, if you do know about this one, no shit, right? But if you don't, you should. What this is a large database of Windows applications that can be ran from, what's intended to be ran from like a USB drive, but it can be run from any media, and generally, once it's extracted out of the archive, doesn't have to be installed, you just run the executable. This is great for lots of things, besides flash drives. Maybe you've got a system you just don't want to install anything on, These are also good because they usually don't leave traces. They don't leave crap in the registry, usually. They don't, you know, leave temp files all over the place. So if you just want, you know, an app you can run that's not going to leave much more than, you know, the PID file, then, yeah. So portable apps, they've got lots of stuff, and I can think of lots of situations where you want to upload and run something, but you don't want to run an installer.
And do folks that are actually, you know, say, for instance, going to a university and they want to run an app at, say, a laboratory's computer, and, you know, maybe the techs are running deep freeze or something and they're rolling back that desktop to fresh every day when they reboot, you know, that's something you might want to consider. You just carry your applications on a disk, you know?
Yeah, if it's a scenario where you actually can't install stuff but you can still run stuff, then, you know, again, you know, if you don't have admin privileges, this is a great way to get a lot of that stuff going, too.
It's also a good way to bypass a proxy. I know in high school I had friends that would Firefox or something up on a thumb drive, pop that thing in because it's not typically, you know, proxies are set with group policy through Active Directory, and unless they specifically have a group policy set for Firefox, you can get around their proxy typically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And again, you're making me feel old, Sard. We didn't use flash drives in high school. We used floppy disks. And yes, I ran Napster from the floppy disk.
Yes, yeah, we used floppy disks too. They were just coming out when I was
in Internet high Explorer off of a zip drive, folks. Zip 100. You know, the good old days of the click of doom. But you could just basically go in there and run your Internet Explorer.
Okay. Yeah. Did you have a real zip drive or did you have one of the USB ones?
No. I had a real
parallel port zip drive. There you go.
Parallel port. Yeah, I had one of those too, dude.
Yeah, see, I wish I'd kept mine. They're handy.
I actually still have one. I have one in my computer right now. It's IDE. But yeah, dude, I have old archives and shit on zip disks that I still every once in a while when I want to be nostalgic. Go and look at.
Well, you know, I found a bunch of zip disks going through some stuff the other day. I don't have a zip drive anymore. I may have to get on eBay. I hate to do it, but I might. So,
well, that used to be the sneaker net way of getting files on. If you only had a dial up or you only had a really crappy DSL back in the day, you'd go to the school and you'd have a stack of zips and you'd get your TV shows and your music and stuff and download them. And
I'll do you one better than that. I had a Diamond Rio. Today they call them the PMP 300. They didn't have a name when I had mine. The first MP3 player, mm-hmm. I had one of those in high school. And I'd bring the little cable with me because it was a parallel cable with this weird little connector on it. And if you renamed any other file .mp3, you could get it to copy on there. Of course, it wouldn't play, but you could use it like a 32 meg flash disk.
Ooh, fancy.
Hell yeah.
That was the trick back then for getting shit home. But
Well, you know what pisses me off about zip disks is a long time ago, I used to work at Staples, did computer work and all that there. They still sell, of course, USB zip disks. You want to know how much those motherfuckers are?
Way too
They're
much.
They're like $90 for a freaking zip disk reader. Old ass technology that no one uses anymore.
That's why it's $90. Nobody ever buys it.
Yeah, it's freaking ridiculous. Like, I could go on eBay and buy one for like $10. And my little rant on.
I might have to do that because I found some zip disks the other day, and I'm curious what's on them.
Dude, someone at work found zip disks and gave me a bunch of them. I have like, I don't even know, like at least 10 zip disks that are brand new, still in the shrink wrap.
I want to figure out how to get a zip drive to talk to a Commodore 64. Anyways,
You and that Commodore.
I love the Commodores.
If you could have a love child with that Commodore, you would.
It would be creepy looking. Strange looking keys for teeth. Anyways, next up in Digital Dojo here, this one's cool. This is MOBA livecd.mobatech.net. This is it's also a portable app. It'll run from flash drive. It runs live CDs, like Linux live CDs. In a QEMU environment, just single executable, pull it down, you know, VMware off a flash drive, essentially. Well, it's not as fast, but, you know, if you need like a quick user environment that's not restricted, and in this case isn't going to stick around, so if you want to, you know, hit a bank or bank site, or, you know, you just want to run something where you're not going to have any logs left, it's opaque because it's a live CD. And it's running in QEMU, so it's like generic hardware. So you can't hardly track it from browser cookies or anything else like that. And if you want a generic live CD for use for web browsing, I recommend Linux Mint because you already have all the plugins you need, like Flash and MP3 support and all that good stuff. But this is great because you can take a live CD ISO and this little program, throw it on a flash drive, and you've got a portable environment that you don't even have to reboot the system to get into. It can be a little slow, so you want to make sure you run it on a system that's actually got enough horsepower to run VMs. But other than that...
That is freaking sweet, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I had not heard about that one. That's cool.
Yeah, check out their MOBA Xterm program, too. I love that. That's actually replaced PuTTY on most of my systems for me.
Huh.
Because it's actually a portable... Their MOBA Xterm, same company makes it, is a Sidewin environment packed up in a single executable with an X server. So you can SSH into a box and then still run X programs.
Really? That's remotely. Freaking sweet.
Oh, it is. It is a dream to work with when you're Well, I SSH into a server I use at work and run Terminator, so I have a full real terminal environment that I can split and get multiple shells and not have to worry about SSHing in all the time and opening up multiple connections. It's a lovely program to work with. So,
very cool.
Yeah, that's a good one to keep an eye on, is this Mobitech company here. And the last thing we've got in Digital Dojo is it's up at archive.org, switch details, switch hacker, hack 3, R, con L 2011. It's HackerCon 2011, HackerCon 2. They've got all their videos up on archive.org. If you can't decipher what I called it, you can either quickly Google it, or just, I'd much rather you go to Galaxy 15 and hit the links. And lots of good videos up on there. I haven't watched many of them yet, but again, sort of in the same stuff as the DerbyCon videos, worth your time to watch.
Yeah, that's absolutely good. A lot of basic information and a lot of advanced information for people that are, you know, definitely curious. Like, are you?
I think Iron Geek did the videos again. So if you like his style of videos.
The DerbyCon ones came out really well. I like the split pane type thing. That was cool.
Just they need to do lapel mics if they could get a hold of a couple of them.
They had a few floating around at DerbyCon. I remember seeing people messing with them. They had a problem with the batteries dying like a lot. So I think they were like trying to use old rechargeables or something. I don't know. Anyways, so we are on to story time. Because this is fucking hilarious and frightening at the same time. So, anyway, that's enough of that. I like playing with the music and sound effects, but I feel like it's a morning zoo show when I overdo it. So, now, this, I have to be cagey about this, because this is something that happened at work extraordinarily recently. So, I hate that I have to be so cagey, because the story's better if I could tell details, but I can't. Freaking responsibility and shit, right? So, anyways, I had a very interesting meeting with, a couple of days ago, with some employees of various governmental three-letter agencies. We had a project going on at work where we were going to be taking some laptops from a semi-secured environment to a not-secured-at-all, practically hostile environment, and then bringing them back in. Now, of course, I've got tons of ideas for how we want to go about doing this, but regular people have to be able to use these machines as well. So, our upper management thought it would be prudent to bring in some employees of three-letter agencies to see what they thought of the project and see if they had any input. Apparently, there was one of them involved in the start of this project, which I don't have all the details on. But anyways, at this meeting, they didn't really give a shit about, say, encrypting the hard drive or locking people to VPN connections or anything like that. They really didn't care about actually doing, you know, defense. They just wanted to do the forensics on our hard drives for us. Like, they were willing to drive 2 hours from their office to where we are to image these drives before we checked the machines out and after we got them back. This is a government agency. These are federal police.
Well, as all your information is ours.
This seems like a Fourth Amendment issue to me for some reason.
Right.
I mean,
we don't give a fuck what happens to them. We just want the data after you're done.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, excuse me, you want to what?
Yeah. You know, I'm also confused, dude. How the fuck does a place that you work at just do they call those three-letter agencies and, like, say, hey, can I talk to your, cybersecurity dudes? How the fuck do those dudes just show up?
We have some DOD contacts. We actually have some classified material that we deal with. And,
shit. That's cool.
So they, now they're going to shoot me for even saying that. But this is why I'm being cagey as shit, which I hate. Believe me, I would love to actually go into details. But yeah, they wanted to image our drives constantly, like a lot.
Right.
And they kept emphasizing, oh, we don't care what they're doing on them. We don't care what their websites are looking at, what they're putting on there, their work. We just want to see if there's malware on there. I'm like, uh-huh. And the moment you see 4chan in that history list, that person's name is going on a list.
No, I was just going to say, talk about being on a list, huh, Heavy?
let's refer to the earlier article about using live CDs. Anybody using a company laptop? Remember, live CDs are your friend.
Well, and truth be told, I can do the forensics. I started talking to the guys after the meeting to pick their brain on some of the stuff that they have to do forensics on. And it became very clear to me very quickly. I knew more about doing forensics on iPads than they did.
Right. That, well, again, you know.
These are supposed to be the experts. That scares me.
Well, you have to understand, we've gone through budget cuts recently. So that means people...
Oh, no. Think about this for a minute. They were offering to take the time to image these machines and do the full forensics investigations on them, like a lot. Which means they have the time and money on their hands to handle, you know, 10 to 12 of these hard disk images a month.
That's true.
And drive down and pick them up. They're hurting for shit to do.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. You wouldn't think they'd be interested in that.
Well, I like I said, I think it's... Honestly, I think it's a fishing expedition. I think they see the chance to rifle through a whole bunch of data, and I think it's a fishing expedition.
That's crazy. What'd your upper management think of that, all this?
Interested? I mean, I guess it gives them a way of an out of saying they're not responsible for something if it's on there. But, and admittedly, if, you know, somebody brought one of these machines back and there's kiddie porn on them, hell yes, I'm calling them first. You know, the people who want to look at these hard drives, hell yes, they can have it. That's not my point. It's just, if I get the machine back and there's nothing wrong with it, I'm not going to let, you know, federal police rifle through the hard drive just because they want to. If they got a reason, or if I feel like they need to, it's not like I'm going to make them come to me with a warrant if I think something's actually wrong with the machine. I'll hand it to them. Don't get me wrong, but I don't feel like they need to be searching through every hard drive just because it's been out of the secured area.
This is something that I don't know if we've been covered on peer decking yet or not, but the idea that a good security professional intentionally is blind to any personal data that doesn't violate any rules. Essentially, we can go into a machine and it's just, we're trained to do this where we fix the problem, we get done with it, and we continue on regardless of whatever personal data they have on there, so long as it doesn't violate any policy, their rules, laws.
It's like generally you're picking through a machine. I don't care what porn they have on it. I really could care less. I mean, if you want to get down right to it, that's what everybody's embarrassed about, is the browser history and their porn collection.
And this is exactly why you don't take your computer to Best Buy to get it fixed.
Yeah. Or it's some big burly football player and they're embarrassed about the episodes of My Little Pony that are on there. But anyways.
Did they talk about, like, are you going to tell the employees that use these laptops that they're going to be monitored like this? Or
mentioned having answers ready in case we're asked.
Oh, so you have to ask, be like, "What? Why is this looking?"
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to run it that way. I think I'm going to make sure that it's on the form, and then I point out to them, "Yeah, you know, there's a possibility if something's wrong with the machine."
Talk about Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, not even letting them know.
Now, here's the point. My boss and I are very sensitive to this kind of stuff. I get twitchy working with IDS boxes and capturing people's emails. To be honest with you. That, you know, as many jokes as I make, it actually bothers me when I see people's personal shit like that going across the wire.
Yeah, I understand.
Frankly, it's none of my business, and I really don't care. But,
yeah, exactly. It can give you an uneasy feeling, even though you're just trying to do your job troubleshooting something, looking at an IDS for weird traffic.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, I actually have a hat somewhere that says, I read your email. I think it's hilarious. I don't read anybody's email anymore because it's boring and kind of creepy. So... I had the access for a long time. Anyways, not going into... Yeah. Anyways.
We'll talk later.
Wow. Anyways, so I just... The reason I bring this up is not because I want to lampoon what's going on at work or these guys we met with. They seemed like all right guys. Well, one of them was kind of a douche, but most of them seemed like all right guys. One the one who's kind of a douche also was pretty much an idiot. He made a point of stating the obvious like a lot. Anyways, I don't want anybody digging through.
Digital Pearl Harbor? Did he say that?
No, God, thank God, no. But we did get an email from him, something about flash vulnerabilities on an iPad. Anyways,
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, you know, you do that. Yeah. So, makes me wonder. But I don't mean to bash these guys. I'm sure what they were doing was legit. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, I wonder how many organizations would, instead of questioning this, because my boss and I are pretty sensitive to it, would go, oh, yeah, sure, you guys can go rifle through the hard drives. You know, yeah, if you see something, let us know. And just not even think about it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, dude, you know it's all that way. Most people have no idea thinking about that.
That's
what could potentially be on there. They're just like, mm-hmm. Oh, you have a 3-letter acronym for, you know, in your job title. I should let you do whatever.
Yeah, you know, well,
I'm sure they were legitimately just trying to offer their help. But at the end of the day, I don't, you know, it's like, sure, the guys in the meeting with us might have been legit, but how do you know somebody else in their forensics lab isn't going to be picking through and looking for something and logging everything? And, you know, I'm sure they keep copies of everything.
You know, there's all I have to say is that in certain agencies, they've done a lot of recruiting, you know, in the last few years before things got tightened down a little bit. And I'm not thinking they got the cream of the crop to work for.
Well, that's entirely possible. But the reason I bring this up, like I said, is not to blast these guys, not to lampoon what's going on at work. Because, well, I'll be honest, the first time I was explaining it to Heavy, he didn't quite see where I was going with it. No, maybe I didn't explain it that well. But it's because be aware that a lot of places probably don't give it a second thought and will let government employees, you know, rifle through under the auspices, you know, they think they're trying to help. But, you know, so don't leave your shit lying around.
Yeah. Did they ask for local admin creds or your old
boss? No. The contractors usually do that and we laugh at them. But, no, these guys didn't want anything like that. They didn't even really want the hardware. They just wanted hard drive images. So
that's interesting. I figured they'd, you know, if they got that far, then like you said, whoever they're taking it back to, like, oh, well, you know, maybe I could just install this little keylogger program. Or
No, nothing like that. I'm just more concerned that it's like, you know, the whole it's a privacy issue at the end of the day.
That's true.
I don't feel like it's right to let them have every image of every hard drive that passes through this project just because they want to help. I mean, it's because of who they are. You know, this is a don't talk to the police scenario.
I would say, yeah, in this example, and I mentioned this before the show, is recently I was robbed, and so I've been trying to get help from my local PD, and that had a whole hell of a lot. They were like, okay, we'll write up the report and turn it into your insurance company. Woohoo! I'm like, you going to try to find the guy? Not interested. So Buddy called up. He's interested in trying to like stay out of jail and give us, you know, the vehicle that was stolen and eventually pay back the cost of the shit. But you go to jail for doing that kind of stuff. It's just the way it works. I called the PD and I'm like, hey, you guys want to do some social engineering or something? I know you guys take psych classes in college, and no, they really don't care about actually doing any kind of information or forensic science anymore. It just, so again, this, to get back to Morpheus's point, maybe this is just them being lazy and this is the easy way of doing it instead of actually getting in there and doing the much better process of forensic investigation where you're trying to defend against things, that maybe you put some monitoring software on there that doesn't violate privacy, you know, concerns.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have monitoring software on these machines, don't get me wrong, but I don't have the ability to prosecute. So,
but even then, it's still the whole part where are they telling these people that they're like, sure, it's like, yes, this is company property. Yes, company can do whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. Typical EULA type stuff. But this is like three-letter organizations not letting people know. That's a little shady.
Well, it I got kind of a weird vibe during the meeting. And, you know, it was odd. And I just want people to be aware that many organizations probably do this. They probably let government employees pretty much have the run of their data. So, you know, if you're using a computer that's not yours specifically, you should be aware of that it's not yours and be careful what you do on it, because you suddenly might find yourself in trouble with it, especially if it's something where, you know, like if you take it in to get the hard drive swapped for whatever reason, you don't know where that hard drive's going to end up. Especially if you know, anything could get the attention of a three-letter agency.
And then there's the other consideration of, is it a violation of HIPAA? I mean, are you guys in violation by giving up the drive without a warrant?
Actually, that was an interesting point that came up in the meeting. That the reason we're having these issue machines, you know, we're issuing them out for the project, is because we don't want people using their regular everyday use laptops or their own personal equipment in these hostile environments. So.
What are you taking these to fucking Afghanistan? Are you thinking they're going to get shot or something? Like, what the fuck?
China. it's well, Afghanistan's possible, but mostly it's China.
But yeah, so the point is very insecure, and frankly, the Chinese are probably cloning all the hard drives anyway. So,
well, that's why we want to give them one without anything on it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, leave your personal data at home, because if you do take something, if you don't think about it, and you've got stuff on your laptop and, you know, it is stuff that's classified or should be classified, or if you're talking corporate espionage and you take it someplace like that and they clone it off, well, you know, you took it. You brought it with you. You should leave that at home and take a clean machine.
Or if it's something that the Chinese would get pissed off at, like Tiananmen Square, oh, you know, those kind of things. you know, that kind of stuff that you may have on there legitimately because you're a citizen of the U.S., they might get pissed at. So, yeah, clean drive would be really nice.
Well, go ahead.
So can you paint – I was just trying to paint the picture. So you have people that are traveling to China and you think that their drives are going to get snatched – and then imaged or possibly something installed on there? Are you thinking
I'm more worried about stuff getting installed on there or people's drives getting imaged by, say, customs?
Yeah, I was just going to say, okay, so like customs, like fucking airport security going into there or something? Or are you thinking like even just being connected on the internet down there that they might catch something?
Well, it's like, okay.
Firewall?
Well, you know, if we have a person of importance going over there, which happens from time to time, and their machine gets pwned, and they come back and they start sending out emails, most people are going to probably click on emails from certain people because, well, they're high up in the company.
Right, that makes sense. That's interesting.
Huh. It's all about defense, but we're going to have to wrap there. It's time. I had an awesome topic lined up for after this, but we talked way too much on a talk show. What a surprise. So we're going to wrap here. I'm going to save this topic for next week because you guys can see what it is. And Sard, I'm sure you and I could go back and forth for an hour on it.
Yes.
So
I was waiting for you to get to it. It's too bad we didn't.
Yeah.
Next week.
I mean, I'm debating. Well, we could go long. It's already
kind of late. Save it for next week.
We'll save it for next week. We'll leave. You know, I didn't plan the format change that well. I planned on changing the format, but then didn't change the amount of content I threw. Whoops. So, we'll try to get to that next week. And so I'm going to wrap it up there. Let me just mute the Skype call and play us out.